Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, November 14, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our donation, click on our tab, weekly tab. I lost my place here, sorry. Okay, yeah, if you'd like to ask a question, you can go to our questions. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to 11. If you're listening live over a radio or another network, you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If you would like to email us a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Also, please join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs, where we're sending a book to sheriffs. You can find a tab on the right-hand side of our website, and I believe you can find it also on our front page. Okay, we'll pick up where we left off last week on our scripture reading. We're in the gospel. We're in the book of Mark. Romans, and we're in chapter 9, picking up after we left off last week. So, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 9. I say the truth in Christ. I lie not, my conscience also bearing me witness in the Holy Ghost, that I have great heaviness and continual sorrow in my heart. For I could wish that myself were accursed from Christ for my brethren, my kinsmen, according to the flesh, who are Israelites, to whom pertaineth the adoption and the glory and the covenants and the giving of the law and the service of God and the promises, whose are the fathers, and of whom, as concerning the flesh, Christ came, who is over all. God blessed forever. Amen. Not as though the word of God hath taken none effect, for they are not all Israel which are of Israel. Neither because they are the seed of Abraham are they all children, but in Isaac shall thy seed be called. That is, they which are the children of the flesh, these are not the children of God, but the children of the promise are counted for the seed. For this is the word of promise. At this time will I come, and Sarah shall have a son. And not only this, but when Rebekah also had conceived by one, even by our father Isaac, for the children being not yet born, neither having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election might stand, not of works, but of him that calleth, it was said unto her, The elder shall serve the younger. As it is written, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. What shall we say then? Is there unrighteousness with God? God forbid. For he saith to Moses, I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. So then, it is not of him that willeth, nor of him that runneth, but of God that showeth mercy. For the scripture saith unto Pharaoh, Even for this same purpose have I raised thee up, that I might show my power in thee, and that my name might be declared throughout all the earth. Therefore hath he mercy on whom he will have mercy, and whom he will he hardeneth. Thou wilt say then unto me, Why doth he yet find fault? For who hath resisted his will? Nay, but, O man, who art thou that repliest against God? Shall the thing formed say to him that formed it, Why hast thou made me thus? Hath not the potter power over the clay? Of the same lump to make one vessel unto honor and another unto dishonor? What if God, willing to show his wrath and to make his power known, endured with much long suffering the vessels of wrath fitted to destruction, and that he might make known the riches of his glory on the vessels of mercy which he had afore prepared unto glory, even us, whom he hath called, not of the Jews only, but also of the Gentiles. As he saith also in Ozi, I will call them my people, which were not my people, and her beloved, which was not beloved. And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, Ye are not my people, there shall they be called the children of the living God. Esaias also crieth concerning Israel, Though the number of the children of Israel be as the sand of the sea, a remnant shall be saved. For he will finish the work and cut it short in righteousness, because a short work will the Lord make upon the earth. And as Esaias said before, Except the Lord of Sabaoth had left us a seed, we had been as Sodoma, like unto Gomorrah. What shall we say then? That the Gentiles, which followed not after righteousness, have attained to righteousness, even the righteousness which is of faith. But Israel, which followed after the law of righteousness, hath not attained to the law of righteousness. Wherefore? Because they sought it not by faith, but as it were by the works of the law. For they stumbled at that stumbling stone. As it is written, Behold, I lay in Zion a stumbling stone and rock of offense, and whosoever believeth on him shall not be ashamed.
All right. Sorry I'm late. Kind of fell asleep and woke up late and rushed over to try to get things going. But I'm here now, and hopefully I'm awake enough now. All right, I don't see... anybody seen Gerard tonight, or is Brent here? I don't see either of them.
No, I haven't seen Gerard nor Brent.
Okay. All right, do we have any questions or any announcements? And I don't know if Tom is here. Tom, if you're here and you can hear me, maybe you can get into the queue if you want to make an announcement. I'm not sure. Sorry about that. Let me start that all over again. I guess I'm not completely awake yet.
Signature. They went fast. It's still better because school kids can't write in cursive. True, you got me there. Okay, got me there.
I have three or four questions, Sean.
Okay, hang on a second.
Here. Okay, you didn't finish.
I know. I thought I had emptied the Q&A, but I guess I didn't. Anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. And Tom, if you're here and you want to make that announcement, get into the queue also. I'll take a look, see if I can find you. All right, Jan, how many questions do we have?
One, two, three. About three.
Three? All right.
First question. I am...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay. I am being stalked, and this past week I had people trespass on my posted property. We put out a call to report the license plate of one of the cars to the Punxsutawney State Troopers to start the process of charges for trespass, but we need some guidance on walking through that process. Any help is appreciated.
Yeah, I don't understand the question.
Well, they want to process these people for trespass.
If there is a problem of that type, you just go see the sheriff and make a report. That's the only thing I could think of, unless you were talking about government agents or something. But even with that being the case, I don't know.
Well, so, the problem with the sheriffs in Pennsylvania is they have very limited ability to do anything.
How bad is it there in Pennsylvania? I didn't realize that it's such a problem. Well, what kind of a problem do they have there, Jan?
Well, I think they're just basically process servers.
Really? Well, that's one of the things we're suing for also, is to get our sheriffs back. I know we were doing a lot of work on gathering together information on missing sheriffs, wherever we're missing sheriffs. Like in Connecticut, we have 8 counties, which that's all county. Connecticut has is 8 counties, and they don't have sheriffs. We've lost our sheriffs here in New York Let me think, what is it, 5, 6, 7 counties. And I know there's a couple of states also that have problems with sheriffs, and I guess we'll have to add Pennsylvania to the list if they've lost their power and authority. you know, without a sheriff, you don't have a common law, you know, police force. No one to enforce the common law. No one to protect the Constitution and the common law. So it is something we'll be addressing hopefully very soon. Still working on the papers. I'm very far behind in what I expected or anticipated because of my computer problems being down for a month, and I'm still it's going to be a while before I catch up, but that is one of the things we're doing, is writing those papers up and making sure that we get some, you know, well, we have a lot of problems, and a sheriff's is just one of them. So, but, yeah, let's talk a little bit about that during the week, Jan.
Okay.
I got to catch back up with working with our research on what we're doing with the sheriffs and a few other things that I'm falling behind on. But I'd like to learn more about Pennsylvania and see if we can't get more detail because, again, we have to get our sheriffs back. Otherwise, we have no protection at all. All right, what other question do you have? Well, again, going back to Pennsylvania and the problem as far as someone trespassing, then I guess the only option you have is to make a police report, and if you can't make a sheriff's report.
Yeah, you know, that's they had started that with the Punxsutawney State Troopers, so they weren't sure what all you need to do, I guess. And
All right, what else you got?
Okay, this I think is a two-part, although it didn't say so. The first paragraph says, after seeing this recently, which I think was a discussion from last week, I just issued a writ quorumto on Judge Middlebrook. What else do you recommend that I should do in this case? And I think you addressed that. So the next question, that or the, I guess the question is, it's urgent that you give me your suggestions as to what to do about this rogue Judge Middlebrook's unconstitutional order striking my writ quorumto. So apparently it was submitted and the judge already threw it out.
That's so funny. Well, writ quorumto, it can't be just cast out. It's really putting the judge or anybody of authority, particularly in the courts, of course, on notice, and they have no choice. The law requires, and this is the note you have to make, inside the paperwork, if you followed what we put together, it says in there that they have 11 days, and it shows them the law. The law requires they have 11 days to respond. If they do not respond in 11 days, then in reality, ultimately, they've given up their oath of office. They've given up their office altogether. And the only thing you could do is move to, if you're already in the court. Did they say whether they were in a federal court or state court? Did they say?
No, it did not say, but I think it was state.
Yeah, if you're in a state court, well, let's take a federal court. Federal court, you would go to the appeal in a process right at the time that they have to deal with it right away because the case should continue, but you're dealing with a situation that is struck down by a judge. And you need to get another judge in there. And then, again, if that judge doesn't do what has to be done, you serve another quorumto. It could become a problem if these people are that bad. But if you're in a state court, again, I don't know what the case is about. Maybe you should have gone into the federal court for denying of due process. I don't know what they had done beforehand. But I would imagine if they're not going to obey a quorumto at that point, you'd want to move it to federal court for cause. And ultimately, I think you can attach the idea of due process to it because that is part of due process. You're expecting to get justice, I presume, because in most cases this is the case, probably all cases unless you've done something special. You know, you've been already hijacked from into jurisdictions unknown. So again, I would take it into the federal court for to have you know, it applied. They have no choice. The other thing is there is a process that you can go through contacting the bond, the bonding company. So you have to find out how these people are bonded. And then usually generally there's a bonding company involved with that, of course, and then you go to them and you file a complaint with them, and that can press forward the issue, and the judge can't stop that. But meanwhile, again, I would push it up to the appellate for a decision on an ongoing case. And again, that's a common thing. When you disagree with a judgment or a decision in an ongoing case, you can push it up to that issue up to the appellate court. So that's the way to go. But also seek out the bonding company. Now, we do have some information on our website. I think it's under starting the Committee of Safety. Let me take a quick look. Bond for the Winds. Those people also, for those especially who don't have too much knowledge of how the court system works, and I wrote a book on this, on how to get court access in the common law. You know, so you really need to understand how the system works. But in any event, if you don't understand how it works, this is one thing. Even if you do, you can do this anyway. You can go to these people. We put together a page for them. It's called Bond for the Winds. And it explains a lot of information, and it talks about the process of obtaining a bond, the bond. So you've already put forth the paperwork to demand through a quo warranto. I don't know if these people that work with the Bond for the Winds, whether they'll understand a quo warranto, but you can explain it to them. And it's the same thing as serving a letter, because that's where they start with the server of a letter of intent and then filing the claim. So you can talk to them and pick up at the point where it talks about filing the complaint, the claim. Let's see, there is some contact information down here. You can go to their website. Here's some request letters. You can get some, you know, ideas and information from them. Here's a letter of intent. You can get some ideas, but you're past that point. But you're at the filing a complaint. So you can click on that and get some more information. That should open another page. Yep, there it is, filing a claim. So there's a lot of information there. And you can also join the Bond for Winds Telegram group, and there people will help you in the process from this point forward. But I would go through the process of pushing it up through the courts because they can't just get rid of it. I mean, just think about that. How criminal are they going to get? You know? Anyway, there is a law. They must obey the law. Next question.
Okay, can someone help me or direct me where I can get help with legal advice on debt?
On debt? D-E-B-T?
Debt. D-E-B-T.
You know what? I see Gerard's in the room. I don't know what kind of problem they have with debt. If they're looking to clear their debt, you know, off of, I guess, you know, the places where they report. I know Gerard and I went through some of this a while back, but I've never got too involved with it. And we should probably put something together. Gerard, do you have all of the paperwork on the debt thing, cleaning up debt? I think you had something on that.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Back when we were working on it, I sent remember those cardboard things that he gave me as far as what to do first, second, third, John Galea.
Yeah, there was cards you had or something, yeah. You are coming in a little low. I don't know if you can boost your mic, but continue anyway. Just speak a little louder.
Hang on, I don't know. I'm having trouble with this stupid
thing. You got Windows 10?
No, this machine is my old machine. It's 7.
Oh, that's easier to get than to. It should be easier to get to the boost for the mic.
Yeah,
do you know how to get there?
Doesn't this have, under preferences, doesn't...
Yeah, it should be in there, I believe.
Can I do it here? Let's see. Yeah, but it's saying it's all the way up.
But you said, well, I raised your volume up so I can hear you. I guess people have to raise their volume. But go ahead, finish off what you were saying, and then you can fish around for that.
Anyway, that was... I think that was called Zero Debt, was the company. He's still out there. But, I mean, I gave them... They had... You do it yourself, or there was 3 different levels you can come in on, you know, where they would just give you the information, you write your own papers.
Mm-hmm.
The other one was they give you some kind of limited help, and then the third one was they would write everything and send them for you. And I think I gave in on that.
This is to clean up
Well, it was credit card. It was any of it. It was, you know, they, whatever it was, you followed the proper cards. But it's basically the same. I'll tell you, things have come away. That was a while ago. That was over 10 years ago, John.
Yeah, it took some time. Yeah.
And there is so much stuff out there. There's this, I think it's Instagram, and this one girl comes on every day and gives tips how to clear your debt, how to talk to the bill collectors, how to give yourself, how to bring up your credit score, and she's on 2-3 times a day with these little like TikTok things, and it's really good.
Is there any place that you know where we can get some instructions on it? You know, I know I can probably research this out, but if I don't have to go do the research,
but I don't know what her. I haven't clicked on her. You know what I mean? I mean, we did what we did, and it worked. You know what I mean? You know, I also learned a lot about the Fair Debt Practices Act, which is something that you should do, because there's things that there was laws put in place to help the consumers, and there's a lot of stuff they can't do. And
one of the key things, you know, just logically speaking, if people are collecting information that's damaging to you, and they can't prove, or they have, you know, no decision was made, you know, like through due process, and then establishing the debt, I think by law they got to remove that information. And it's only a matter of challenging that. I don't know, whatever information you have on that, get it to me, and I'll see if I can put a page up on this, because...
Yeah, I mean, you got to keep track of their phone calls and stuff, because each time they call you, and if you tell them, don't call me at my house, or don't call me, and they do it, and you can prove that they did it, it's a $2,000 fine for them. And that's another way to fight them, because they don't listen to that. They hire stupid people to do their dirty work, you know? So... If you read that Fair Debt Collection, there's a lot of things that they cannot do, and you could say, don't call me here, or call me here, or don't call this.
Do you have a link for that?
And they, or it's been a while. I'll look and see what I have left.
Yeah, see what you can find. And
see, the trouble is that was probably 3 computers ago, you know, and some of that stuff is still on hard drives that I didn't pull off, but. I'll find you. There's more current stuff now than what we were doing back then.
But just so you know that, and this is for anybody else's information too. You know, if your computer, you know, went out and you lost all your information and all your work, and you get another computer, or you have to put another hard drive in, bear in mind you could take that hard drive and they sell. You can go up to Amazon to buy this, and there's numerous places you could buy this, where it is a plug-in, and it's got the power plug. And it's got also the plug for the informational part that goes into your hard drive. And you plug that in.
Stat cable, I think they call it.
Yeah, I don't know what it's called. I don't recall. I know I have one around here. I got a couple of ways to get in. But you can get in. The other thing is you could pull your hard drive out and just plug another hard drive inside your computer. Because, you know, you got all the – you probably have enough room in there to put a couple of hard drives in there. So you could put your hard drive and plug it in there, and then it becomes like a file cabinet, and you can go into your hard drive and pull all your information out. Even though the C drive won't boot up, well, that's fine. You don't need to boot it up, because you're just going in there as a file cabinet, and then you can drag and drop all your information into your new, you know, your new hard drive, which has your C drive on it. You know, for me, I've got 5 drives inside my computer. And so I'm very redundant, and I got 3 drives that are not connected to my computer. So I've got 2 or 3 copies. I got 1 copy inside my all my work is saved on a drive other than C drive, and then I have another drive that gets backed up every week. So I got 2 drives inside my computer that has my files, and then I got another drive in there that has a copy of my C. So if that fails on me, I can just flip over to that one. The problem I had before was that I had to move to Windows 10, and I couldn't salvage my work that way as far as saving my C drive, and I had to reinstall everything, and that was a big problem because I had to reinstall all this stuff. It took me a long time to do that also. But the point is, you should be redundant in copying your files, but you can get access to a file, a drive that failed. You can get access to pull all of your information going into your file cabinets. So you might want to try that to retrieve old information. And if you're not sure, you know, when I meet up with you next week, you can bring those drives down and I can try to put it all together and put on another drive for you and send it back. But it's a pretty simple thing. You should be able to do it. Just plug in. So, all right, give me that information and maybe I'll put a page together for that. So,
yeah.
Okay, let me move on. Where were we with questions, Jan?
That was the last question, John. I have no more.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm not sure what kind of information they were looking at for that. Were they talking about a credit problem with debt or some other problem?
They did not say.
Yeah, so I don't really know exactly what they were really asking anyway. So, okay, and no announcements?
No, not really.
Okay, anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a *6 and a 1. We're going to go right into an open forum here. Anybody's got any questions or comments or corrections to offer? *6 and a 1 if you're in on a phone. And if you're coming in on an app, there should be a button there to get into the queue. And Tom, if you're out there, you know, get into the queue. Meanwhile, we'll take our first person. Let's see. It's a 954 area code from Florida, it looks like. Maybe you can give us your first name from Florida. You got the mic.
John, that's me, Andromedia.
Oh, you're calling in on a different phone, huh?
No, it's the same phone. I guess maybe you're not, I don't know, your system's not reading it. But that was my question that Jan was reading, and I actually uploaded to you a copy of the document so you could examine it. And it's with the United States District Court, where I followed your exact procedure in filing the writ pro lawanto. So it was against two judges.
So you filed pro lawanto, and then the judge struck.
They got another judge struck it. Yeah, another judge. Yeah, a friend of theirs to strike it and to strike, writ of error I have done to strike.
Let me see if I understand. You filed the quo warranto against one judge. Another judge came and struck it. Let me try to understand this first.
Against two of them.
Okay,
at the same time. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so you filed a quo warranto against two judges at the same time.
Yes. Yeah, in the same place.
I think, let me think about how we put the paperwork together. You should have done it singularly, one for each one. I don't know that it makes a big difference, but...
not really.
No? Okay.
Because you can add two defendants at a time.
Yeah, but the thing is you got two judges, and one judge is striking it for the other judge, and the other... I mean, what are they doing?
Because both are in the same... Okay, one was already a defendant for violating due process of law. All right, he recused himself and passed it to another. That one just refused to give me due process still. All right? Now, the other one I actually was suing, okay, and he defaulted, okay? I was suing him for quite a bit of money. He defaulted. Okay, so I did I entered an affidavit of default, the kind that you have. All right, he still didn't even do anything. All right, so then the other one came in. All right, and so now he refused to give me due process and to give me the original thing I asked for, which was an injunction. Okay, so I grouped them together this time since they were in the same exact case, and I did the quorum on both of them as defendants. All right, because they were both playing games. Now, they've gotten another judge who's not even in that particular court, but in that same district, but in another town, to come in, dismiss the quorum, dismiss my default, dismiss my writ of error, dismiss my mandamus, any supporting documents like some of your own, memorandums of law, okay, that I have filed. I got him to just order me to pay fees, has threatened me that he may place an injunction on me and stop me from filing any further things, talking about he's doing his duty as an Article III court functions. And he's stricken it from the record. The affidavit of default, which is completely in order,
Well, you say from another. You say from another town. Are these town courts?
Well, no. The United States District Court in Florida.
Okay, U.S.
All right.
Right.
Is the same. It's the same district, but you know they're in different locations.
Right. Well, you have to go to the appeal. You have to push it forward to the appeal.
Well, that's what I did. I did that yesterday.
But you have to be very careful how you write your papers up, because you have to be very clear. You're looking for them to require obedience to the law, to enforce it.
Yeah, did your bond enforcement thing.
Right. Exactly. But you
still, one is, yeah.
But what my point is, if you move it to the appeal court, okay, on the federal level, the appeals, okay,
right,
and you're not moving the case, all you're doing is you got a case that's existing in the federal court, and they're doing things that are unlawful, they're dismissing things, and I presume they're not even telling you the reason why they're dissing it. They just don't like it, and they're dismissing it, and they're presuming you don't know what.
He says I'm rambling on, and it's hard to understand. I know.
Yeah. So forget about that. The point is, if they're gonna strike something, they have to explain why they're striking it. Number one. The other thing is, usually for striking something, you know, is the other side that is defending themselves is the persons or the ones that have to request it to be stricken. So is the judge acting totally?
No, they didn't. No one did that.
I'm just trying to give you some information on how it should go,
go
what's happening here. So the point is, they're striking this because it's up against them, and they don't want to show you their oaths of office. They don't want to reveal their economic situation, nor to who holds their bond. And now when you move this up to the appeals, to the appellate court, it's a case that's ongoing and in process, and it's a bad decision, and you're looking for the obedience to the law, which is really what you're focusing in on, and you got to tell that judge in the appeals court, and it'll be, I think it's usually three judges when you go up to the appeal, and you have to tell that judge, a group of judges, that you're asking.
I put on there that they're refusing to obey the law and not give me the information I requested and that I wanted on the record.
Okay.
They're not obeying the law.
That's pretty good. That's pretty much what you need to do, but you make sure you have to quote the law. Otherwise, they don't have nothing to act upon. They know
everything that's in your, it's in your bond enforcement what the law is.
Right, it's inside that. But when you move it to the appellate court, to the appeals court, you have to say, you have to be very specific that you're coming up there for the sole purpose to enforce the law in the lower courts, that they're being disobeyed, and this is the law that they're breaking, and you put in a copy of your paper, and the requirement for their oaths.
I did.
That's the next
step. I put in a copy of it, yeah. I put a copy with it, yes. Mm-hmm.
Right, well, so, be interesting.
Yeah, and they put it, of course, back into the de facto jurisdiction, telling me that I'm doing all these things without asking the court for permission and all that carrying on.
Well, obviously, you're in a civil law court, and you may have opened a court of record, but they're operating
in a court of record,
and they're not interested.
They always do that. Every time I open a court of record, I go through this over and over. They turn around and bring me back into, de facto. And this is the first time someone has ever come against the writ of error that I've done and where I told them to cease and desist and stop trying to seize control of my court. And this is the first time someone even called himself dismissing the writ of error. That's pretty bold there. He's like, really, you know, their attitude is like, you know, in Florida, that's how they are. Their attitude is, how about you make me?
Who is the defendant? Is it an individual, or who is the defendant in this case?
Originally, the defendant was first an individual, but the individual is not participating, period, at all. And that the individual has been served, and I know that the individual.
So they didn't, you're going too way too fast. So the individual isn't participating, meaning that they defaulted.
At all.
Then they
defaulted. Exactly.
So your papers, hold it. Your papers were never answered, and a period of time,
that's
using
right.
30 days, has gone by, and you filed
right.
an affidavit of default, and then
yes.
what?
Yes. They still didn't do anything, and then
Hold on. You filed an affidavit of default, and then what?
Yeah.
What did the judge do with that affidavit of default?
Refused to still give me what I asked for, which was a mere injunction.
The
original judge refused to give me the original request for the injunction. He dismissed it. I added him as a defendant for dismissing it without, he didn't give me a good reason. He just did it because he wants to. The usual language, failure to, you know, to state a claim, and it's the usual
They filed a 12, Rule 12, I think it's on you. I understand.
I understand.
Stop. Hold on. Let me go back because I can't get the full picture here. Okay, you filed. Let me say what I think you said, and then you can correct me. You filed an affidavit of default. The judge.
Yes.
They respond. Well, before you filed the affidavit of default, they filed what I think it's a Rule 12 to throw you out for not stating a claim and that kind
right,
of.
Right.
And then
yes.
the judge said, "Hey, yeah, you're right," and they threw you out. They're trying to throw you out.
Right.
And you filed a default because they didn't respond and answer.
Well,
yeah,
the original judge dismissed it for no reason, said failure to state a claim. So I added him as a defendant. Then he recused himself, all right, because, and I challenged jurisdiction and everything. I really killed it. He recused himself. Then another judge came in, all right. I asked him for it. He just sat there and wouldn't do anything. All right, it denied me and wouldn't do anything. Then he turned around and asked me for fees. I said I did a writ of error, and that's on the stop. Asked me for fees, and I said the common law, why? Okay, then he still wouldn't give me what I asked for. Now I added him as a defendant. He let it sit there for months and months. Now him and that other judge went and got another one to dismiss the entire, everything that is valid and was time valid, validly filed and validly stated.
Okay, well, I understand now. You need to move it to the appeals and make your point very clear and very short. Don't get too long in anything, and you don't get into basic issues. This is a matter of law, and that's what you want to stay on when you get into your wherefore clause on what you're looking for the appellate court to do. You have to be very clear, try to be minimum. And you know, there's a lot of issues going on here, so I don't know how many issues you want to deal with in one time.
I just want the injunction. They're turning this into a mountain, which is a very simple issue. They just don't like pro se litigants. I don't call it pro se. I say proper persona. They don't like private Americans. Okay, period.
Mm-hmm.
They think we don't have any rights to do what we do.
The problem is
my original issue is quite simple. Nor could they deny the original issue. They just didn't care. I don't really want to go into the original issue as to why I asked for the injunction. All right? I don't want to go into it on the phone. If you want to ask me privately, okay. But that was not a problem. They just didn't want me. They think they own the court.
Okay.
They own the court. And it's between me. The reason why it's in federal court is because it's between me and someone else in another state. Okay?
Okay. It's no surprise to us what they're doing. They don't want to respond because they don't want to reveal their bond to you, obviously. They want to do it.
Yeah, you said that in there.
I understand that this is what we're up against, and we're all fighting the same thing, and this is the major problem. You need to move it up to the appellate process. Like I said,
yesterday.
Hold on. You got to be very specific. Don't get into a lot of detail. and you're focusing on the law, and you're asking them to force these people to obey the law. That's all you're doing, okay? You don't want to get into the argument or debate about what the case is about or any of those things, okay? The law is clear. They have 11 days. When you file a quo warranto, they have 11 days. And if they don't respond within 11 days, they give up their office. And you still pursue them because you pursue their bond for damages. And that's...
Yes, I didn't. All I did was put your... I used your bond enforcement. The only clause I added was the one-liner. They're not obeying the law. They're not giving me the information.
Meanwhile, since you filed the quo warranto already, which is the letter, meanwhile, why don't you look into these people, win for the bonds that we were just going through here, and contact those people on Telegram. I don't know if you use Telegram or anything. I'm not familiar with it, but...
I don't know how to really use it. I have to find out.
Yeah, well, you can connect with them through Telegram, and they will help you with the details. You can pursue this outside the court to go after their bonds, but you still should still pursue the application of the law through the appellate court. Okay?
Yes, I turned around and I did a quo warranto on that one, that judge. That's the first one has done that. To try to dismiss writs. Usually they won't say anything after I do a writ or a writ of error on them. They kind of will back down. This is the first one that's ever done that.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's see where you go with that after you do that. But again,
I sent it yesterday, so, I mean, you're telling me you want me to add things? Because everything that you have in your bond enforcement is exactly how it is, except all I added was, they're not obeying the law. They refuse to give me what I asked for. I want it on the record. But everything else is exactly how you have it on your enforcement.
That's the key, is enforcement, the law that applies that enforcement, and you're going up the line to get enforcement, and if they don't enforce, you go up the line again. And that's all we can do at this point in time until devolution plays out. You know, we're on that cusp, I believe, and these judges don't have the fear of the people yet, they will be getting it soon, hopefully, and we'll see how that goes because things are going to change.
Are they even aware of devolution, of what's going on at all?
Oh, it's very doubtful. No, I don't think. They have no clue. They don't even have a clue about a lot of things, and they certainly don't have a clue on that. They think things are going to continue the way they are. They don't understand. They must read something in the tea leaves, though, because the United States Supreme Court has taken some severe turns away from the corruption and making some good decisions over the past 6 months or so, or whatever it's been. But
all right, so if he's at the appellate court, if they don't grant it, do a quo warranto on them, or just continue on the district court judges?
I wouldn't go any more with quo warrantos at this point in time. You move it up, you're going to get, I think it's a three-panel judge. I think that's what the appellate is. Maybe it's four-panel. Gerard, when we went up here in New York the last time, was it three judges up there? You know, Gerard was with me when we went up. We went up together on a case.
It's been a while since I've been to the court of appeals.
I think it's a three-panel judge. So the point is this. The three-panel judge will make a decision. The decision must be to obey the law. And you got to be very clear, very simple, not a lot of words, and right to the point. That's all I'm asking for, Judge. I'm just asking for you to force the people underneath you to require, you know, they're responsible for them, to require them to obey the law and respond. That's all. And if they don't do it, then you can go up to the next appellate court, you know, the Court of Appeals.
So who am I taking? Am I taking them, or am I taking
If they don't rule correctly, if they don't rule for the law, then you move it to the next step at that point. You're going to the next court, and what you're going to say in the next court is that, hey, look, the appellate court doesn't want to do anything, so here I'm at the Court of Appeals, and because the disobedience is happening on the trial-level court, and if you're in a trial, you're not in a trial yet because they kicked you out on Rule 12, and they always do that all the time. I know I have some language. I'm not sure. You know, I was looking for it recently and trying to remember where that language is with the United States Supreme Court that Rule 12 should be ignored. because look at the case itself. We'll pan things out. There's no need for a Rule 12. They use it broadly all the time.
Anytime they use statutes or rules, I always strike them down. Anytime they try to put rules or statutes on me, I always will object and strike it down.
Mm-hmm.
Always. I don't let them do it.
Okay, well, let's see how it goes from here, because we're only repeating ourselves at this point. But let's see what happens after. What is the process? If you filed it, what is the process of time for them to respond? Is it 30 days?
For the appellate court, for the bond enforcement.
Hold on. We're both talking at the same time.
All right, go ahead.
First of all, like I said, go to the people with bonds and see if you can't go around pulling their bonds from that process, because they got a way to do that, and I just don't follow that rule. You know, if you were out of the court, that's the way I would go. If you're going to pull someone else's bond, you start with a letter. You're in court, so you started with a quo warranto. So now that's the letter. Talk to them to see what the process is, to just continue to bypass, to go forward for their bonds. Meanwhile, you need to do the appellate court like you did. And the question is, did they say how long before the appellate court would respond? And did you let them know that it's an ongoing case?
I just filed it yesterday, and I gave them a copy of the quo warranto. I didn't go into the case being ongoing. I figured they have power to look up the case, which they usually are able to if they want to.
Of course they are.
They're able to look up the case.
Well, they are, but they'll have no need to do, or they shouldn't have no need to do that, because, again, all you're asking them to do is to force enforcement of the law. That's it. Nothing else. Don't get anywhere beyond that with those with the appellate court.
Yeah. You wanted me to go back and say something else? Because I already told you what I said. I already mailed it off yesterday. You wanted me to go back and say something else? I already told you what I already did. I already sent it off.
Yeah, as long as you were clear.
Yes.
Listen, hold on. As long as you were clear in what you're looking for, that's all, which is the application of the law and a copy of the quo warranto, there's nothing else to talk about. That's all you're looking
for. Right, yes. They have a copy of it, yes.
You know, the other problem that exists that you're going to have to deal with is that Rule 12 problem, because that's what you need to get struck. And, you know, I did write some information on Rule 12 in my book. Do you have a copy of the book? Do you have a copy? Did you buy a copy of the book?
I got your book.
Yeah,
and I have your hard, and I have your, and I have your, what do you call it, your Kindle book. I have both. I got to find someone to make it talk, because I don't know how to do it on my computer.
Okay, on chapter 13, okay, memorandums, you'll find Rule 12B, number 6, fail to state a claim. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a memorandum on that, and make use of that, and see what you can glean out of that. It should be helpful in order to defend yourself against Rule 12. Now, I know I was searching around, and hopefully I have it in here.
That was long ago. It's already been past that, and I already struck that down with a specific law. Probably is the one you have that really kills them about saying fail to state a claim. I did that in my disqualification of that first judge, and he left. I really put my bangers on him. It's a strong one. I can't remember, but it's probably the one you have. It's a specific one. I can't remember where I got it, but it nips it in the bud and kills off when they say that. It's one that I had found long ago that it's not allowed to say. And he wasn't able to do anything but recuse himself when I did that.
Okay, here's the, just real quick, this is just the beginning. I'm only going to read a little bit of a first paragraph here, which is a memorandum of law concerning Rule 12b-6.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the purpose of this memorandum is to clarify the fact that Civil Law Rule 12b-6 is not the law of the land.
Mm-hmm.
The Rules Enabling Act goes into the Rules Enabling Act of 1934 should never have been passed by Congress. Said act unlawfully gave the Supreme Court the power to make rules and procedures and evidence for federal courts as long as they did not abridge, enlarge, or modify any substantive right. And then it goes on to get into the details of the court, the civil law, and then getting into the step-by-step, particularly the repugnancy of Rule 12b-6. Now, there was a rule, some Supreme Court rulings on 6 some years back, and I'm not sure whether I got it, because I kind of lost it, at least recently I did, and I'm not sure whether I got it in here. But, you know, it obstructs justice to begin with. It denies due process. It is a lot of things, and the United States Supreme Court has ruled that Rule 12 shouldn't really be applied in the cases, unless the case is really that absurd and ridiculous, they could apply it.
All right, where is it? It's in chapter, I can still file it, I mean, into that case. Where is it, chapter 12 to 13?
Now, there's two chapter 13s. There's 13 and 13A, I believe.
All right, so where is it? Which one?
Well,
I can still file it into the case.
Desktop here, I'm sharing it right now. It's chapter 13, okay, and it's Rule 12b-6, failure to state a claim, and it's on page 314, I believe. Is it 314?
All right.
It's 316 in the book.
Yeah. All right. The book is on my table. I don't think you have time for me to get it.
Right,
tell me where it is. On what page? 314?
Page 316.
316. Okay. Yep. The book is on my table, but I'm not near it. Okay.
Well, you'll have to sit and read the whole thing and ponder it and see how you could use that. I mean, that's a memorandum. It easily can be used for this. Again, at the time, I don't remember whether I had lost the location of the decision of the Supreme Court concerning Rule 12.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether I got it into the book or not, or whether I had found it and I can find it there, or if not, I'm going to have to add to. You know, whatever things I need to add into the book that I didn't have, I'll be posting up on probably that page where I posted information from last week, which is under education, then the law, and then court forms and process. And so people who are looking for the information that we spoke about last week, which is dealing with instructions and forms for traffic court or any kind of a code enforcement problem. It doesn't matter. If they violated you with some code, then you can use these instructions and forms for that. And it particularly I use it for, it's...
Well, they give me a...
When
they give me a code or a statute, let me tell you what I do. Here's what I do. A teacher of law, who's an expert in law himself, that taught me. I take the code and I say that code or whatever that statute is equals unconstitutional, equals in conflict with the Constitution for the United States, equals in conflict with Article 6, Clause 2, and then I put also Mulberry versus Madison, Clairfield Trust Doctrine, several of them that say the same thing. And no judge has ever been able to argue with that, how I write that.
Well, again, the purpose of codes and regulations and statutes are for corporations and people who work for government agencies and the government agencies
Ray
themselves.
Versus Donovan and
so
all
so
that.
It has nothing to do with you. And it's that simple.
Right.
There's quite a few Supreme Court. Hold on a minute. Hold on.
Yeah.
Quite a few Supreme Court cases, which I know I have in the book concerning that makes that point. So you can use that.
Yeah.
And also, the bottom line is the Constitution, law, and equity. You don't fall under equity. You fall under law.
Right.
Identifies with the commercial activities, the corporations, and government agencies, agents thereof. That's what equity is all about. It has nothing to do with you and has nothing to do with me. And that's key.
Right.
They will try to get you on that.
Yeah.
There's numerous
ways. Believe it or not, I just can't remember all the case laws, but I actually put all that, what you're saying. I actually do. But they're determined they're going to do what they want to do. You know, I put where it only applies to corporations, or it only applies to the government administrators, or I apply in all the laws that say that, with the Supreme Court, court rule, Ray versus Donovan, and all that stuff like that. And they still do what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, you know, let us know how it comes out whenever they respond. I'm interested in seeing how they're going to respond to this. But don't get your hopes up too high, because we're still not at devolution point, you know, the other side, moving down the other side of devolution. See, when that happens, it's going to be a wake-up call for these judges. And I think that's when we're going to start to get some good decisions, and the people, they're going to turn around. But, you know, again, that's one of the things we're waiting for in order to file this next paper. Which I haven't even.
I know how much longer do you, and they don't even know about QAnon either. Anon announcing. I saw that he said
they don't listen. They think that's crazy. They think that that's crazy. Well, it doesn't matter. They look at the enemy. Still don't know or understand that they've lost yet. They just don't understand that yet. They don't see it yet.
Right.
It's not clear upon the table.
Well, you know, he threatened me, you know, talking about sanctions and all that in here too, you know, about if I saw anything else.
He threatened you what?
Threatened me about sanctions in here in this restriction.
Well, you're not a lawyer that in the civil courts that you could be sanctioned. You know, I mean, that has nothing to do with us also. And again, they got a different court going on than what the law requires. And but again, you know, they got the gun, so to speak. They got the control, their hands on the controls, and we're still not there yet.
Yeah,
I would not. You should take opportunity of time. You should not push your case real hard. Just don't be late with it, but don't push it fast through, because you really want to stall a little bit, so we can get closer to the other side. So.
Well, I've already sent the Coloranto to him.
Right.
Yeah, I sent the Coloranto to him already. I can't take it back.
No, I know. I understand that. But when you get it back and whatever your next step is, you know, move a little slowly. But I think hopefully things are moving quickly. I know the president is planning to make some kind of an announcement tomorrow. I don't know what that is. I hope it's something really good, but we'll see.
All right, then.
Okay. All right, we'll take our next caller. Thank you. And caller, let's see, is Sarah. You got the mic. Go right ahead. And anybody wants to get into the queue, again, queue's open. We only got one person in it right now. If you're on a phone, *6 and a 1. And if you've got an app that you're working off, there should be a button to push to enter the queue. Sarah, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
All right. Thank you. I guess my question was the whole serving your sheriff, the book. Do you have to give him like the actual book, or can you give him the like copies of the PDF downloads? Is that acceptable, or does it have to be the book?
The full book is almost 600 pages, and the name of the book is
More information. Okay.
So we want to get him fully educated, and so that. Gets him fully educated. Now, we do have a, you know, the book originally through my publisher was going for $45 plus delivery, and the other, hang on 1 second, because my dog is running around here crying or something.
Yes,
hang, Gerard, are you here? Well, let me just finish making this point, and I'll go see what she's doing here. The book in itself covers a lot of things. Now, I republished that book up on Amazon, and I'm selling it up there for $39 and change. And so it's a little cheaper. It's a better book. It's a hardcover, better quality, paper quality, and even cheaper for the to have it mailed. So all the links on the website go there instead. But if you're going to give your sheriff a book, hang on 1 second.
Yes, sir.
We're going to get some silence unless Gerard picks up, but hang on 1 second.
There you go, Gerard. You're muted. I hear you, Gerard.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Blast my ears out. Yeah, I was listening, but I don't know. He's telling her to go to Amazon to buy the book. It's cheaper.
Oh, yes. I heard. Yeah, that's where we were at.
Yeah, like I think it's like $35 on Amazon or something like that.
All right. Is there any particular order that I should take these courses? Or that don't matter, really.
I apologize. Yeah, my dog was running around crying. I think she had to go out. So anyway,
she wants to know if there's any particular order she should take the courses in.
Well, I would just start from the top and work down. Education starts here. I don't know if you could see the screen, but I'm showing it. First thing you come down is the courses. I would take it in the order. The foundation study really is like a prelude to the courses. It's just a lot of videos. There's really no questions.
Yeah.
And you just watch all the videos and go through that. And then you move into the courses. You got the civics course. You got the government by consent course. The militia course.
Yeah, those are the courses I was asking
about. Course. So.
All right.
But
straight
as far
down.
As the book, let's go back to the book, though. Because we got a campaign going on for constitutional sheriffs. And if you click get in the book for your sheriff, what happens is we'll send the book out and we attach a letter from Sheriff Darr. We got a sheriff who wrote a letter concerning the book and the information we have. We put that in the book. NLA has written a letter, so we put those two letters in the book. And then in the front, in the back side of the cover, in the front of the book, we put a label in there, a large label, making this the property of the sheriff's office. So it's not just for that sheriff, it's for any sheriff that comes in after him. So it's the property of the sheriff's office. And there's lots of information and access for them to come and learn, take courses themselves, and the deputies can take courses and so on and so forth. So, but anyway, that's what we're doing with that. So go through that part because it's important that they get a letter from a sheriff, and also we put our letter in there.
Right. All right. Yep.
So make it the property of the sheriff's office.
All righty. Good stuff. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right. I haven't got anybody else in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, again, either click the button in your app or *6 and 1 on a phone. Gerard, you go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I do live in the state of North Carolina. I guess, like I said, I haven't actually contacted him yet myself because I don't even have, like, my other committee members, my recorder, nothing like that. But
so
is there any way you could let me...
You started a committee of safety?
No, I have not yet. That's why I haven't contacted him or nothing like that yet. But I'm working on it. And I guess I Googled constitutional sheriffs, and it says that I have one, but I'm not for sure. Would you know anything about the Brunswick County office down here?
No, I don't. Nothing, any particular sheriffs.
Well, I will find all of that out, and I will let you all know.
Okay, well, it's never too early to educate your sheriff. The first order of business is to try to get them educated. And we have a process that we teach people. If you've got a committee of safety going, while you're creating that committee of safety, you definitely should get a book to the sheriff. And then at some point, then we lay out in our handbook details on creating this committee of safety and all of the processes, and one of the processes is actually meeting the sheriff. And your first meeting with the sheriff really should only be about 5 or 10 minutes long, really introducing yourself and giving them a copy of your paperwork and who you are and as a group and your resolutions. And also your founding documents, which we lay all that out in the handbook, which you find that under Starter Committee of Safety. Just click on Start Here to organize, and it walks you right through, and eventually it'll bring you...
Yeah, this website's amazing.
I appreciate it.
This website's amazing.
But anyway, you know, you don't want to... you want to make contact early on with your sheriff, but you don't want to really meet with him for at least a month away from your first meeting to give him time to, or her to time to digest the information you're going to share with them. And you should be formed at least to a certain point before you make first contact. You should have at least have had your first real meeting. So there's really the introduction to the committees of safety. You pull people together and you do a sort of a small seminar, an introduction to these committees of safety, get people excited and want to join up. And then you have your first meeting. And from that first meeting, now you're organizing.
District leader?
Getting all your, what was that?
You notify your district leader?
Well, if you give a call to the district leader, they can assist you in different ways. And one of the ways is they give you a list of people in your county and the surrounding county, and actually the counties throughout the whole state, so you can make all of our members that is in those counties, and you can make contact with those people, and that should stimulate also hopefully some growth on some other committees of safety in other counties.
Right.
So you invite them to come to your first introduction to the committees of safety meeting, and but you do want to get all your paperwork together,
yep.
So that you can then give that to the sheriff, and then the sheriff has time to digest who you are, what is this group, what are they doing here, because your paperwork will lay out exactly what it is, and you'll have a resolution, you'll have a seal, and you give him a nice package. You can take it down to Staples to get it, the binder put on it, or, I got my own binder. They're not expensive, these little machines, and you bind the papers.
All righty.
And because every time you visit a government agency, you're going to visit your representatives, you're going to visit, I don't know if you have a mayor or other group of individuals that run a board, and whenever you visit these people, to introduce yourself and bring up the purpose of whatever that meeting might be for, even just to let them know that you're there and you're expecting the Constitution to be applied.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
You should always have a copy of your resolutions and your founding documents. But the key thing is to get the sheriff on board first, because once the sheriff is on board and he understands what you're doing and he sees the power of really working with the people, because you're the constituents. You're the people who can help him to get his papers walked and to get him into office and vote for him. And so you'll support him. And once he understands what you're doing, he should agree, because what we're doing is applying the Constitution and our right of self-government and working to get the law applied to these people, these government agents, whatever level they may be on.
Yep.
So,
all right. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. All right. Anyway, there's no one else in the queue. So if anybody wants to get into the queues, like I said before, star 6 and a 1 if you're on a phone, and click the button if you have a an app. But Gerard, are you still here?
I'm trying to nap. You're disturbing.
Oh, well, yeah. Anyway, I don't have any particular subject matter. I'm just trying to think about last week. I know we were talking about instructions for a traffic court. Maybe we talk a little bit about that until someone gets into the queue. Let me get over there to see, make sure. Oh, someone did get into the queue, it looks like. Okay. All right, good. We can go into questions. I prefer that at this moment anyway. Okay, we have a wireless caller. It looks like 336. Maybe you can give us your first name and your state. You got the mic or the phone. Looks like you're on.
Bruce, John. I'm Bruce from North Carolina.
Bruce from North Carolina. How you doing, Bruce?
How you doing?
Good.
I have talked to the sheriff here in North Carolina, Sheriff Page. He's not a constitutional sheriff, and I have studied courts here, and I have studied the information from the website about the North Carolina Constitution. It's a corporation constitution from North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I don't know how it's worded or how it comes down, but yeah, they've incorporated everything, and they've incorporated the states, they've incorporated the United States, they've incorporated counties and towns and villages, they've incorporated everything because they were moving us into corporatism. Corporatism and Nazism is synonymous, and that's where they were moving us. And you know, the brakes have been applied on that, and we are taking a different direction, thankfully. And things are going to change, I believe, rather soon. But meanwhile, of course, we still have to deal with these problems. But, you know, again, if you get a committee of safety going, you know, even though the guy may be unconstitutional, the bottom line is that you can visit him, have a conversation with him or her, and offer them the literature and a book, and ask them straight out, look, are you going to obey the Constitution? Do you understand that your purpose is to enforce the Constitution, to protect we the people? That's your primary job here. That's what the sheriff is for, is to protect the king, and we're the king, and enforce the law, the real law of the land, which is, you know, applying the Constitution against these people, or, of course, if we break the law, criminally, to apply that too. But at some point you should realize that you're becoming a force to deal with. Again, you want to go in with a small group of people, you want to plan it, you want to have the right literature together, you want to make sure that you got a copy of the book, and then you want to refer to that book and ask them, have you read the book? Oh no, I haven't had time to read the book, whatever the case may be. Oh yeah, I started looking at it. Big question is, are you a constitutional sheriff? Are you going to obey the Constitution and enforce it? That's the question. And if he says yes, even if it's reluctantly, well, you move it forward a little bit. It's a beginning. Look, a lot of sheriffs may be off track, mostly because they have no clue on what their job is really all about. They have no clue of the Constitution. Maybe they understand what their job should be, but they don't know what the Constitution is, and they've never been taught it, and they don't know what to do. Okay, that's a possibility, and therefore they follow a county, you know, the county attorney, and who advises them, and follows that instead of the law, and of course then the sheriff, from our perspective, looks like he is not a constitutional sheriff, and he's interested in enforcing it. So that would be our perspective of him. But if we can open their eyes, they can change. So that opportunity should be given. And if they don't want to deal with you and they don't want to respond, you know, sort of shake your dust off your shoes as you leave the office and let it be known, we're going to find another sheriff. And if you get powerful enough and you form your group large enough, then you can start moving towards a recall of the sheriff and push for another election and look for a candidate that will obey the Constitution.
Okay. Your website is beautiful. It's very knowledgeable. But your states, all your different states that you have there, it tells you what all the states, all the states' constitutions all about. You have a list of all the states. So I studied the North Carolina constitution of states, and it tells you right in their constitution that it's a corporation. And it's run by the mayor, and it's run by the governor, and they give the orders. They control the militia. They control everything.
Well, again, you know, if it states something like that, I'd be very surprised, but I wouldn't doubt it either. So that's one thing. But I will tell you that all states pretty much run like a corporation. All states are trying to get control of all the political individuals below the governor. They try to set it up so that the governor has control, especially upon the law enforcement. Look at here in New York, they tried to move control of given permits for you know, concealed weapons. They tried to move that over to the state police and take it away from the sheriffs, and then they told the sheriff that, hey, you got to give us the listings, you know, the information, who has a weapon, and they wanted that computer information, and the sheriffs refused here in New York, thankfully, and you know, if the state police start to enforce the law, which is the Constitution, they're going to enforce it, you know, as the governor, you know, directs them to enforce it. So however the governor wants to interpret the Constitution, then they'll push that enforcement that way. And if they want to take your guns away, matter of fact, the question was asked to a commissioner, I think it's the commissioner of the state police or whatever the title was here in New York, that if the governor was to order the removing of arms from the people, would you do it? And they said, well, yeah, if the governor tells us to do that. Well, the sheriffs took a different position here in New York, and I know I went down to speak to my sheriff about this with a group of other people, and he says, not going to happen in my county. And he told us that, you know, if they try to come take my guns or anything, just give him a call, he'll be there. So, and a lot of sheriffs, they had most of the sheriffs of New York on board with this. We have seven counties without sheriffs, so they're totally lost. Most of those are the five boroughs of New York City. And we have two other counties. But there's a couple of sheriffs that didn't get on board. So, but they had primary. We have 62 counties. So if you remove the seven and maybe two that didn't get on board, you're looking at about 50-plus counties that denied the governor and also agreed, as far as we understand, to not take, not permit the removing of weapons. We were fighting a big battle here when they were moving legislation through, I think it was called the SAFE Act. And we had filed some papers, and that, I don't know, I think that legislation did pass, but then the Supreme Court's ruling destroyed that altogether. And again, the sheriffs are not complying. So we're kind of lucky with that in New York here. It's kind of a, well, you know, New York, half the almost half the population of New York is down in New York City. And that's why New York City is so, that's why New York is such a liberal kind of state. Upstate, well, mostly, it's more of a Republican perspective. So we don't have that liberal attitude in most of upstate of New York. So, which is most of New York.
Contacted seven people, and I gave the website to seven people. Now, I have not went back out and talked to the seven people. It's mm-hmm. been a week. Now, do you think I should go out now and talk to them again and bring them to a meeting?
Look, at the best way to follow through, we tried to be very, very specific and give a lot of information, and I realized we had to give detail because, you know, people are ignorant to all these things, and of course, before I searched these things out, I was as ignorant as anyone else. And I was ignorant to the Constitution until I started to realize I was being beat up by the IRS and other agencies. And I had to learn. And I learned through the School of Hard Knocks. And we did a lot of research, and we got a lot of information together, and we built the website that we have, and we built the courses that we have, and wrote nine or ten books here. And we're moving along. And we laid out because, again, you know, there is a process that we can follow, and we're following the processes of our founding fathers. This is what our founding fathers did, is they formed, well, they were growing up in committees of safety. That was the common thing back in the colonies. I mean, that started with the Pilgrims, and that was because there was no government, so they became a government onto themselves through committees of safety. But as time went on and Britain took control of the colonies and started to act as its government, of course, they accepted that, but they lacked a lot. There was a lot of things and legislation necessary to be done, and they were not doing the job of governing the people. So they just continued with committees of safety and filled in the gaps of what the government government didn't give them, they did for themselves. You know, Jefferson, belonging to the Committee of Safety, was called forward on two occasions to as a legislator for Virginia. And that's how it went about. They were the legislators drawn out from the committees of safety, who were the people. And then after the Constitution in 1789, the committees of safety continued in what we know today as being the committeemen. And so the committeemen put the people on the ballots. They're the ones that walk all the papers and get the signatures. And they're the ones that control the whole political process. And, of course, that was taken over It was statutorized, the whole process, where they created statutes to control, created party bosses, and they've corrupted the whole system. And it's no longer even looks like the Committee of Safety. And they the only thing they're involved with is the political process to bring us either the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. But now we're pushing forward the real Committee of Safety. You know, all of our founding fathers were part of a Committee of Safety within their, you know, within their colonies. Paul Revere was a on the Committee of Correspondence. That was his job, you know, bringing forth the message. In that case, the big historical picture that we all know about is the British are coming. That was the Committee of Safety sending forth the information from one colony to another through the Committee of Correspondence. The Committees of Safety are the ones that formed the Continental Congress, first and second, and pushed forward the Declaration of Independence. The Committees of Safety is what they used to rule and have presidents every year throughout the war and during the whole process until we became a nation. I think it was a 10-year period. Every year another president was chosen until we finally had our Constitution together and our first President of the United States of America was elected. And so all we're doing is going back to do what they did to bring, and that's how, you see, that's how you have government by consent, is through your committees. So anyway, the point is that I'm trying to get to is we have a book, a handbook. I don't know if you found it yet, but you should start.
Found it.
Okay, it's a step-by-step process on exactly what needs to be done. So, yeah, communicate with each other as often as possible. It could be over Zoom or over Skype or over the telephone. It could be getting together a cup of coffee here or there from time to time and coming up with thoughts and ideas and getting lists of different local groups and organizations, gun clubs and things. We have a whole list on our website here of different ideas of different groups to invite, and get ready to find a venue where usually a library is really good. Usually a library has a room that you can use. There's no cost for it. Also, every town has a hall, you know, a town hall or a village, and you can use that. If you go down to you know, and just tell them, hey, you're organizing groups of people here, and you want to talk, and you want to use the room. It's your room, you know. Or you want to use the hall, and then they'll schedule you in. So that's we've done that numerous times all over New York here. But the libraries are nice too. Libraries are also usually set up with a projector and everything. You just plug your computer in, so you could do a PowerPoint or whatever you want to share on a screen. So libraries are set up that way. The town halls are all set up that way. And that's where you want to have your first meeting, usually. You can also do it at a gun club or any other venue you want. It doesn't matter where you do it. But at some point, you want to meet on a monthly basis. But the first meeting is really an introduction, sort of a seminar. As a matter of fact, we have a layout of our seminar, and we have downloads and everything. Even on, if you just go to our front page, for instance, this is an online, let me go to the welcome page. This was an online seminar we did for the sole purpose of laying it out so people would see how it would run. And so you can click on this, let me see here, seminar, the plan, government by consent, recorded on 12/18/21. And you can click on that and go through the process. And you know, you can literally almost play this video straight on through and then take the breaks as we break and then have a little discussion or a break for, you know, for 5-10 minutes or whatever. But we do have all of these videos. We have these PowerPoints. We have all this stuff to be downloaded. We have lots of PowerPoints and videos that could be downloaded for future meetings, you know, because every meeting should be a learning process. There should be something that you learn at every meeting. And then the order of business should also, of course, be gone through and everything. And again, we lay it out with a handbook. So follow the handbook. And once you get maybe, you say you have what? Did you say you had about 5 or 6 people or something like that already?
I have seven. Seven people already.
Okay,
get yourself on the website too.
Have you had a physical meeting yet or just conversations on the phone?
I have talked to 2 of them physically already.
Okay, what I would do is meet in a diner. try to get all seven people together, try to find a date that everybody could agree upon, and or even, you know, meet on Zoom or on you know, on Skype or something in the beginning for a short meeting, but only to set a meeting, a physical meeting, where the six or seven of you can come together and actually sit down, go into a diner, and then, you know, bring paper and pencil and start your plan. Bring a copy of the handbooks, make a few copies so you can make sure everybody's got a copy, and start discussing a plan and start discussing the plan specifically to get your first introduction meeting. And if you can get 20 or 30 or more people to come to the introduction, a lot of these people, I think, will join. And once you get, you know, a dozen people or so together, 10, 12 people or whatever, you can start your paperwork you know, get your resolutions done and get your seal and make contact with the sheriff. Make sure the sheriff's got a copy of the book. You get we have that campaign for constitutional sheriffs where we send the book out. And prepare all your paperwork with seals on it. Have a nice binder. And again, this is all laid out, detail, point by point in the handbook. And then you're moving along. Once you've had your first meeting and you've got certain people, you know, got people coming, two or three meetings go down, you should be meeting with the sheriff at that point. You should be in really good shape. And once you get the sheriff on your side, because that's your focus, your main focus is to connect with the sheriff, get him to see what you're doing and understand the constitutionality of what we're doing and understanding the Constitution himself through the book, and he's reading it, now you got something going. Because once you have the sheriff on board and he's sort of signed in with a signature, so to speak, you're now filing papers in other parts, other local government agencies. And you're bringing them back under the will of the people is what you're doing. You have a political, you develop a political committee, you develop an educational committee, a judicial committee, you know, all these committees in order to take control of our government. This is how our founding fathers did it. This is what we have to do. And so we become the real true committeemen. When people have a problem, where do they go? They go to see the committeeman. And what could the committeemen do? Well, when we become the real committeemen, you know, right now the political committeemen, if they make a phone call to an individual who's been elected start reading them the Riot Act or tell them, hey, we've got to meet with you and we want to talk with you on Thursday or two, they're going to be there, okay? Because those are the people that put them in office and those are the people that can take them out of office. And so that's what we got to become, is those people that can put them in office and those people who can recall them and take them out of office. And then, of course, the power of the grand jury, which is becomes part of the process of the judicial committee within your committee of safety. There's a connection with that and the administrators for the grand jury who connects you to the grand jury so you can pursue criminal action against these people who are violating their oaths of office if a criminal action was being executed through that violation. So, again, this is powerful stuff. And this is how people have government by consent. And no one person has to know it all. We all know a little piece here and a little piece there. Put it together, we got the whole thing. That's how it works. So, but yeah,
thank you.
You can also come and ask questions. You know, run into trouble, and we'll try to give you answers to try to help you. And also, you know, again, once you start to get a lot of people talking, you're going to figure things out on your own and what has to be done on your grassroots level. But we'll always be here for as an advisor.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, thank you. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Gerard, are you here? Or did you fall back asleep again?
Yeah, I'm snoring.
Okay. Do you want to take the mic for a while?
Sure.
We got three or four people in the queue. I'll hang in the background here.
Okay. What time is it? It's... we got 15 minutes left.
Time to take the next person.
Hang on a minute. Got to get to my...
Yeah, I got to disappear in about 10 minutes to pick my son up from work. But I'll hang out here. Let me push the button while you're getting yourself ready here.
what is it, Ross next?
Yeah, Ross, you got the mic. You got Ross on the mic now. Good, Ross.
Yes. Does is that having no success of getting people in the National Liberty Alliance membership to join? I feel like I have to do it outside of the membership to create a community of safety.
Well, absolutely. Do of course you really want to get as many people as possible local. And you'll find that the members, you know, like let's take New York State, for instance. New York State, we have almost 700 members, I think. And but that's spread out through all of the counties. Unfortunately, a lot of people that have signed up for membership, and we've got over 10,000 people. I think that we have 10,300 and something, you know, on the right-hand side of our website. The website automatically keeps a tab on what the size of our membership is. And I'm just scrolling through looking. Yeah, we have 10,347 members. But unfortunately, you know, a lot of them are sleeping. And hopefully they'll wake at the right time. But and we still are growing. But we do need the critical mass. The critical mass is, you know, we start to hit all of a sudden, you get 20, 30, 40, 50, 100,000 people. That's critical mass. And so we're still pushing for that. But, yeah, you're going to find a lot of people are sleeping. Get things going, and once you get things going, you know, you reconnect with them again and see, you know, if they're still interested in getting into the Committee of Safety.
My mom was saying to me is most people don't want to have all that extra responsibility on their shoulders to be the sovereign of our nation.
I understand that, and what you need to tell them, and I tell people all the time, then you don't want liberty. If you expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. If you expect to have that liberty and you're not going to, there's no one there to protect it, the Constitution's not going to protect itself. That's a proven fact. Look where we're at. Look what has happened to us. We are stuck between a rock and a hard place. And if it wasn't for Trump, and even without Trump, maybe the military would have acted without him. But without that, we're in big, big trouble. We lose. We're lost. Of course, things have turned around. And they haven't realized that they have lost, and they just keep falling deeper and deeper into the traps that have been set for them. But that is the problem, and that is and that is a shame that it's the problem. Shame on those people who refuse to stand up and become educated. You know, it is a problem that people don't want to become educated, because I will tell you, I've spoken and I continue to speak to a lot of young kids, 18, 19, 20 years old. They haven't got a clue about anything. They don't even know who Thomas Jefferson is. You know, you ask them questions and some of them don't even know who George Washington is. I mean, this is a sad, sad state of affairs. And it's up to us. We the people who are woke. We the people who have realized that there is a problem. We the people who realize that if we want government by consent, we have to get active. We have to step up and take that power and authority. And so, yeah, it is a shame. It is a problem. And I will tell you, the biggest violator that caused this problem, in my opinion, is the computer, particularly, you know, the smartphones. But we have people who tweet and don't read a book no more. They don't have books in schools, it seems. At least, you know, my nephew, he just graduated, and I don't even know that he graduated from anything, really, but he just graduated, and he's never had a textbook in his life. They don't have textbooks, at least in the schools around here, and a lot of things are computerized. Look, you have a computer program. It's important to understand a computer and how to use it as a tool, and you can use it for play, but if you're going to only use it for play, now you have a major problem. And that's what the kids are taught. All they do is play these stupid games all day long. They don't even know that there's a world out there. They live in this crazy world of, you know, on the Internet, and they don't know what reality is. They say terrible things to each other on their phones. They put terrible pictures up. I mean, it's a horror story. They wouldn't do that to people face-to-face, but people do crazy things when they got a shield, you know. I don't know. But the bottom line is it's really destroyed our young, and it's destroyed. It's destroying America. People need to pick up a book, and people need to get active.
I think it's also how Our education system started going south in 1820 anyways, by conditioning us to see if government has control over education, they would never want to teach us liberty.
And they also have control of the media. They have control of the entertainment business. They got control of every. You're absolutely right. This is the problem. We have to break away from the evil that has taken control over us. And so the people who, you know, most of the people who are over 30 or 40 or 50 years old, you know, they're closer to having an education in the past than the kids growing up today. But it's up to us to fix that job, fix that problem. And I'm writing a book right now on the incarnation, and I'm going to share the prelude or the prelude, I believe it's called, of that book once I get it done. And people need to hopefully understand what we have to do, because we have to bring the Bible back into the schools. We have to bring prayer back into the schools. And a lot of people don't know or realize that we have had the prayer and the Bible in the schools until 1963. It was 174 years since the nation was created in 1789 to 1963. And by one Supreme Court, they threw it all out of the school. And everything went downhill since, everything. But we were a people where the Bible was the center of our education. You know, it's hard to visualize that in the environment that we're living in today, in the lies that people have been taught. It's hard to visualize that. But that is what we, the people, have to fix. And only the people can fix that. And so that's what committees of safety need to be educated about, and to step up and take care of business, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're going to find a lot of people who aren't interested. Hopefully, as time goes on, they will be.
Yeah, like my mom is an educator, and she said that would never happen.
Well, it's going to be difficult, but we can all also rely on one thing that Jefferson said, and that was, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. So if we can get just a couple hundred people in every county, which would be really just a very small percentage of the population of the United States, a very small percentage, less than 1%, then we can take control of the government and have government by consent. And that will grow as people in the community start to realize the power of that taking that responsibility on, number one. The other thing is, it's up to the people in the committees of safety, which would be through the educational committee, to visit the schools to require a proper curriculum. We can push the law requiring them to teach civics and a proper education concerning the Constitution and common law and how our court systems work. And we're working on textbooks on that right now. And the other thing we can do is also push the Bible back in. We'll get resistance from that. But as long as the people need to learn to understand the position, why the Bible needs to get back into the school, and how the Bible was in the school up until 1963, and how the educational system flourished until that was ripped down. And of course, it was degrading before that, but it really degraded after the Bible was removed. And, you know, you got private schools that are still good out there, and at least you still have people coming up out of those schools. But the bottom line is people need to understand the history of our nation, we as a people, and the common law, and where all this comes from. And maybe next week I'll talk in more detail on this particular subject. Anyway, I'm going to have to leave in a few minutes. I've got to pass things back over to Gerard, but you guys can continue to talk and get two other callers. Gerard, you got this?
I yield the floor if we have other two speakers.
All right, thank you, Ross.
I think Gerard left. I saw a notice that he had left the meeting.
Ooh, okay. Well, I can run this for a couple more minutes, and I got to take off, so we'll be shutting down at exactly 11 o'clock. But until then, we'll try to take our next two callers. Thanks, Ross. Okay, we have do you feel, Florida? Is that you again?
Yeah, I had a different question. About 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, I sent you a link. I urged you to look at it. It was a thorough report, all right? It's by a black news commentator, but it's about...
Well, send it again because, you know, my computer, you know, I was down for a month, and I wasn't even here for the meetings because Gerard was running them, and I couldn't even get on. I was having so many problems.
Well, it's a monster that we have here in Harris County, who on the news clipping you're going to hear, he has committed violations ever since 2008 inside and outside of the department, terrorizing other deputies. He committed murder of a private American while on suspension. He's been suspended several times, but the head sheriff keeps just slapping him on the wrists and letting him do whatever he wishes. And I'm saying,
send me. Alright, hold on. Send me the information again because like I lost a lot of email and everything, so I didn't get that email. Send me the email and I'll take a look at it. Hold on. Send me the email and maybe we can talk about this next week. But I want to take the last caller because we only got a few minutes. And we can pick this back up next week.
All right. You saw it. You got
to
look at that.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it yet, so send it to me again.
Yeah, that's terrific.
All right.
I will. I'll do it tonight.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's take our last caller here, Eric, it looks like. What state are you calling from?
Annie.
Oh, it's Ann. What is it?
Oh, I'd ask you, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, hey, John, it's Brandon from Arizona.
Oh, okay. Go right ahead.
I've got a question. So me and my girlfriend have been dealing with a nightmare with family court for the last 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
False accusations, and her ex was a complete narcissist and abused her and all this mess. Well, we've been dealing with not only him, but major corruption in the courts. To the point is, like, say, the hair follicle, she passed her drug test the last 3 years, and they still have her drug testing. She still hasn't seen her son in almost two. For no reason, they've taken her son from her, just leaving her ex out of, and there's no proof on anything. Well, now they put her into severance court, trying to sever her rights from her. Her ex's mom worked as a paralegal for the prosecutor out here in Arizona, and so it's just been a nightmare getting any sort of fair treatment. What can we do to kind of...
Well... It's very, very difficult. It can be one. You're going to look more towards the other side of devolution for it to happen. I don't know if you're familiar with devolution, but if you're not, you're going to want to look it up. You'll find it under today's issues. If you're looking at the desktop I'm sharing, highlighting today's issues and come down to devolution and learn about that, and then down to Q News Anon. You know, after that. But first, come to understand what devolution is if you don't know. That's number one. Meanwhile, what you could do is you could do a habeas corpus. And if you don't have the knowledge and information and understanding of how to do a habeas corpus, you know, maybe we could do one for you. We ask for a donation of $100 or more, but whatever you can afford if that's a problem. And then we can try to put out a habeas corpus on your behalf, and which really for the children, that is. She's trying to get the children back? Is that what she's working on right now?
Her son, it's been all complete false claims and no proof, even our CPS dismissed the case. The police department, they dismissed it, no findings, but yet still the judge has still got the right.
That sounds like a slam dunk. Then they're just stealing your children because they have that judge has no. Is the ex trying to push to take the children, or what is he trying to do?
Absolutely, he's the one that's pushing all this because he's trying to hurt her because she left him because she's tired of abuse and all that, and so she left him and he's been trying to hurt her since.
And well, here's the truth, and it could be sad sometimes because it is what it is. And it, at some point, it ends up to be a lot of the child's decision on what's going on. But look, at the child deserves both a mother and a father. Mm-hmm. And if they can't get along and they break up, then they got to work things out. And, and what is right is 50% on both sides, and that's that. Now, sometimes the one side, usually the father side, will say, well, look, and I'm working, and I'm this and I'm that, and you know, I can only do 20%. They could work that out. They need to be able to work this out, evil or not, you know, whether this guy's a bad guy or whatever. They got to try to work this out, and you can always get someone that arbitrates some of these things and to work it out. And I know that's difficult. I know it's very difficult. But the thing is that that person is the father, and they do deserve something. But obviously the mother is being denied access to the child, and someone has to stand up for that child.
He's actually destroyed her. He's told her son that she's dealing drugs, on drugs, and she's passed through a drug test the last 3 years, hair follicles, anything. But he's destroyed her son's image of her. Like they had an amazing relationship, but now her son doesn't want to see her, and just completely destroyed.
How old is the son?
12 now.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a shame, because that's going to be a hard one. I mean, obviously, I don't have an answer for that. Prayer and the sharing of the gospel might be the only solution for healing. I mean, it is definitely the solution for all healing anyway, but nevertheless, you know, that's tough. If the child's mind has been polluted with lies, it's a problem.
Yeah. We did pay the donation, $100. We got to fill out the form. Is there a way to get it? Because they're doing a severance in juvenile court, so we don't have the option of even a trial by jury. It's just it's not allowed, or whatever the state court or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, again, they abrogated the common law back in 1938. The United States Supreme Court abrogated the common law. I mean, that cannot be done, but it was done anyway, and the people were sleeping and being ignorant of what was going on, and today still people being ignorant and not understanding that's where we're at. Our courts are Babylon. They're civil law courts. It's the courts of Babylon. The only thing that you can do is to try to move out of those courts, and that's a very difficult thing to do, and few people are able to really press the law to be able to get justice in the courts. But that's where we're at, and it's a major problem. And again, things are about to change, though. Devolution is in play. And I feel I really truly believe it's very, very close here. I know the president's going to make a big announcement tomorrow. I have no clue what that is. Hopefully it is really going to push us over the edge to start to get justice in this nation and start put some of these people where they belong, in jail or at the end of a rope. So we'll see. Justice needs to be applied, and hopefully it's soon. Sooner
so coming. What should I do? Should we just fill out the application to have y'all help us? So I know we paid the deposit.
Well, what you need to do, number one is learn how the court system works. You know, the family court system is the worst. And you can get out of that by moving it into the United States Supreme Court. Not the United States Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court. And you can move it in there for cause. And your position of cause is that you're not getting due process in that. You cannot possibly get due process in a family court. The whole thing is ridiculous, and everybody gets a lawyer, and everybody's against each other, and it's crazy.
And juvenile court, they're severance, because they're trying to sever rights, so they're for no reason, and they have a juvenile court, so it's like you're not a juvenile.
You got to pull it out of there. You got to get it. You look at you. You don't agree to those things. The problem is people comply and they move right in. They think it's the law and they got to do it. And they will try to tell you it's the law and they'll try to force you to do it. But you need to then take it into the state court, and you need to move it into court for cause, cause. And the cause is that you're not getting due process. Now that state court is probably going to reject you and say no, get back into that court and let them deal with it, because they don't want to deal with it. Okay, that's probably what will happen. Then you have to understand what to do next, and the next is to move it into federal court for cause, and that cause is a denial of due process, and you're moving it into that court for a decision, and you want that decision in order from that court to the lower court to cease and desist, and that's the final thing. Now you can also try to push it into the state court at that point, and the federal court can force the state court to hear the case. Now you move it into the state court. You have to open up what's called a court of record. Now this, if you don't know these things, this becomes overwhelming, at least it sounds overwhelming, but it really, really isn't. This stuff is not that I'm not the brightest person in the world. I've struggled through school when I was younger. I dropped out of school. My last grade I finished was eighth grade, but then I started reading as time went on and self-educating myself in many, many areas. And if I could do it, anybody can do it. And it's just a matter of spending time in your interest and reading a book, because people don't read books. You know, Musk was asked, you know, how do you know all these? Where did you learn all these things? He says, I read books. That's all he said. I read books. You know, he didn't even go to college, he said. He says, I enrolled in college but never went to the classes. I just read the books and went in for the test, and that was it. And yeah. I wish I would have thought of that. I went to college too, because I would have time then, just read the books, do the tests. Yep. But the thing is that I wrote a book. It's called Court Access and the Common Law. If you're looking at the desktop here, I'm going to scroll off to it, and it's on the right-hand side. Government by Consent was my first book. Court Access and the Common Law, I just clicked on that. That's my second book, and I've got about eight handbooks. Or nine handbooks, but you can read about this book here. Okay, it's $39.95. It's a hardcover book. It's really cheap for what you're getting. It's about 600 pages. It's a fine quality put together book. Amazon does a good job putting books together, far better than my publisher. And but anyway, you can read through here. You know what this book is about, chapter to chapter, and you can also read the preface. Okay. Now the thing is, if you want to learn how the court system works, and especially if you know absolutely nothing, or even if you know a little bit, enough to get you in trouble maybe, or whatever, if you take the book and read it as a book from the very beginning all the way to just read it as a book, okay? Maybe take some notes as you're reading things that are important, or yellow highlight certain things in there, whatever you want to do, but just read it as a book. That'll give you the fundamental picture, the framework, an idea of how things work. Then you go back and you follow the instructions, because the whole book is really an instructional book, but it's written in a way that you can read it and just flow through it. But so you get the basic understanding, and then you go back and you say, well, okay, if I want to go into court, I got to start writing papers. Start practicing writing papers. Put the whole thing together, whether you're going into court with it now or not. But you have to. People need to learn how the court system works. That's where we get justice. And if you got to go hire a lawyer, you got a problem, because a lawyer does not have your best interests in mind to begin with. But no one knows.
You don't do anything.
No one knows your case better than you do. And I know they'll say only a fool will represent themselves, but I disagree with that. I've been researching this stuff for now about 14, maybe 15 years now, and I will tell you I am absolutely convinced only a fool will get a lawyer. If you're going into a case where you kind of need a specialty information on it, especially, you know, common law is one thing, because it's all logic and common sense. That's what common law ultimately is, and truth is self-evident, and all you have to do is learn how to bring it up. But you know, if you need someone to help you in articulating in a court, and you hire someone to assist you, that's the key, to assist you, okay. Where you have the final say on all things, and you let them know where you need the help and where you don't need the help, and then you get the assistance. But a bar attorney is not going to be that choice of person. You really need to get a common law lawyer or someone that's outside the system that knows how the system works. And there are not many people like that. So the bottom line is, we need to teach our children how to handle the courts, how to represent themselves, and understand the process. And you need to learn, and we need to take care of our own business.
Absolutely. Can I send you an email to see if I can catch you some more questions later on? I know you're about to leave. So.
Yeah, send it to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. And in the message box, you know, write my name, John Durash, and it'll kind of pop up to me when I see it, because I breeze through the mail from time to time and look for people that maybe are trying to communicate something to me through that. But so I'll keep an eye out for it. If you send something in the next few days, I'll keep an eye out for it and
awesome.
See. What's your first name again?
Brandon, sir.
Brandon. Okay, I'll keep an eye out for you, and we'll see what it is that you're looking
at. That's your picture. We did a donation, and we're getting ready to try and see if we can have y'all help us as well. But okay. I'm training, so.
We'll see what we could do with a habeas corpus or something, and try to little understand better the case. The only thing we do help people with is habeas corpuses and non-judicial foreclosures. Okay. So those are the two things we'll help people with. And because we can't, we don't have a group of lawyers and the time to do all this stuff, you know. So those are problems that really we formed a strategy on. We can just put the paper together. So.
All right. I'm sweet. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Good night, John.
Okay. Good night. Okay. With that, we're going to end our program. Appreciate everyone coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next week. Godspeed, everybody. Good night.